You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Next up, we have my producer Jack Marshall sitting down this morning with a researcher from the University of Auckland discussing the Tamil struggles in Sri Lanka. Families have been conducting ongoing protests and hunger strikes demanding answers from the government about the whereabouts of their relatives. For more, Jack sat down with Umesh to learn more about the situation.
All right, so here today we have Umesh Panaga. And we're here to talk about the recent protests in Sri Lanka regarding the Tamils and their persecution. So, welcome. How are you today?
Thanks a lot, Jack.
And so, you are studying researching the characterizations of international crime. And so, what are you looking into specifically?
The characterizations.
Characterizations, there you go.
So I'm looking at the period 1948 to present in Sri Lanka, which used to be called Ceylon until 1972. And in 2009, there were these massive crimes committed, or mass killings. And in response to that, the UN and a number of other agencies did reports. And they looked at what happened, and they said war crimes, maybe crimes against humanity happened, but none of them looked at the question of genocide, which the Tamil people on the island had asked the UN to look at. So I'm looking at whether or not genocide or these other crimes are appropriate to describe what happened in 2009, but also from 1948 and to date.
So who are the Tamils?
So, the island has about 20 million people on it at the moment, and 75% of that are from the Sinhalese ethnic group, who speak the language Sinhala, has a separate script, and but in the northeast of the island is a Tamil-speaking majority area, and historically that's been the Tamil-speaking area. So they're about 11% at the moment of the population.
So they're the largest minority.
Yes, yeah. But the question of the languages is contested, because they would consider themselves a majority in the northeast, whereas the Sri Lankan government considers them a minority within the unitary state of Sri Lanka.
Yeah. So the Tamils are looking for autonomy. Ideally.
Yeah.
And so, your research, you're looking into kind of proving genocidal intent against the Tamils?
Yeah, so the international crimes normally talk about war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, and they're not necessarily one is more grave than another, but the thing that differs between these crimes is the intent. So well, war crime or crime against humanity or a genocidal act can all be the same act of murder, for example. But what makes them different is the intent with which they were committed.
And so how do you find intent?
Yeah, so that's one of the difficulties with genocide. So the intent is that the act needs to be committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part a particular racial, national, ethnical or religious group. So you can look at a whole range of evidence, the general treatment of that group over time, also like statements by political figures and that might describe what
it's a hard thing to find out, basically. what is happening in like Tamil areas right now?
Protests.
Yeah.
So in Kilinochi, a few days ago, marked the 100th day of a group of families protesting about the whereabouts of their relatives. And so, at the end of 2009, a lot of people surrendered to the army, and those families who witnessed that surrender have never seen their family members again. So thousands of people are unaccounted for, and they've been asking for the government to explain where they are. So they've just been asking, the two demands is to publish a list of these missing people and also to give access to some secret detention camps where these people may be held.
Mm-hmm. And so, what is it, Amnesty says that there's between 60,000 and 100,000 still missing. And so has the kind of government done anything to move toward?
Well, so there was a change in president in early 2015 that was used as a moment to say that this new leadership is committed to transforming the Sri Lankan state. But these protests show, and they're part of a series of protests across the island, across the northeast, that the government isn't actually committed to this reconciliation agenda, which it claims to be. Mm-hmm. And so issues of land colonization, so the military still controls a lot of land in the northeast, and there's a heavy military presence. They run a lot of businesses, the economic interest, tourism, and then also settlers from the southern parts of Sri Lanka being moved in under the cover of the military, and the military is also involved in building Buddhist statues, which are associated with the Sinhalese group. So this process continues, and that the aim of this is to undermine the ability of the Tamils of the northeast to claim the right to self-governance.
Why is it important that New Zealand should kind of take a role in this and observing?
Well, the New Zealand government has recently been deepening its ties with Sri Lanka. So the New Zealand government has significant interests. 50% of the milk market is Fonterra in Sri Lanka. And recently, John Key, early last year, visited Sri Lanka, and the Sri Lankan Prime Minister late last year came to New Zealand. So the Beehive said that New Zealand recognises the considerable efforts the people in the government of Sri Lanka are putting into the country's reconciliation process, and we are hugely supportive of these, including through our work to boost the country's own dairy sector and improve the livelihoods of its farmers. So you have to ask whether or not these attempts to expand these economic linkages are actually contributing to the reconciliation process, when it's clear that there is no reconciliation process happening. And in fact, the government's continuing this strategy to try and undermine the Tamil areas of the north and east.
Yeah, I was doing some reading, and so in January there were more hunger strikes, and then they became so serious that the state's defence minister actually flew there, discussed with the protesters, and organised for a proper response in February. And kind of since then, it seems that there's all these kind of just meaningless statements with no real action kind of following. So, what more could New Zealand do?
Well, I suppose in the first instance, the New Zealand public should demand that our government doesn't contribute to abuses that might be happening. But then an important thing is the narrative around what is happening. So there is this narrative that after the armed conflict ended in 2009, there's now this reconciliation process and everything is going well. But that narrative is allowing the Sri Lankan government to continue these abuses. And recently, for example, the European Union granted special trade preferences only a few days ago to the Sri Lankan state, which will allow them to export, I think, primarily textiles to the EU. So that kind of action gives the green light to the Sri Lankan government to say, oh, we agree that this reconciliation process. So
it's legitimizing what they're doing.
Mm.
But it seems from the evidence from New York Times and Amnesty and from these protesters that not actually much is being done, but they're getting legitimized by these kind of global powers. Yeah.
So I think challenging the narrative or basically recognizing the reality of what's happening on the ground will help the people there. Recently, so May 18th was the anniversary of the end of the armed conflict, when tens of thousands of people, Tamil people, died, and one of the human rights activists there, Father Eliel Rajan, who's a Catholic priest, has been harassed by the military for by the police in the Sri Lankan state for organizing these memorial events, and by granting this GSP plus and
sorry, what's the GSP plus?
Sorry, generalized scheme. Basically, it's a preferential trade deal that the EU grants to
the textiles
least developed countries on the basis of their human rights and environmental records. So, or meeting those standards by granting it it's basically saying that the Sri Lankan government is meeting those standards.
Yeah, so, on one hand, it's saying it's doing a lot, but as these protests kind of show that they're not quite meeting these demands. So now we're at kind of this situation here where they're giving these preferential kind of, you know, money towards textiles and things like that. But how does Sri Lanka move forward? Like, does your research kind of look to find a way to do that?
So I think the purpose of my research is to basically give an accurate portrayal of what has happened and what is happening on the island. And I think, that if we acknowledge that what is going on in an accurate manner, that would help the situation by itself. And then it seems that the people there on the ground and are the ones who are trying to challenge what's going on. And I suppose not supporting abuses against them or even acting in solidarity with those people is the way forward.
Yeah.
And protecting these particular activists, I mean, international action can help protect some of these activists who are there on the ground, like Father Eliel Rajan, who are trying to bring these issues to light.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.